Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety, and we are so glad you're here today. We have a really special guest on our show today, Charles Labor, who is not only the host of The Way Out, a sobriety and recovery podcast, but also an amazing person who has inspired so many in the recovery community. He's been on his own sobriety journey and shared countless stories of hope and growth through his podcast.
Today, we are going to talk about some of the most challenging aspects of sobriety: social pressures, emotional hurdles, and psychological struggles. From navigating social situations where alcohol is present to dealing with some of the emotional ups and downs of early sobriety, and also addressing the psychological impact of long-term recovery. We are going to cover it all.
We are, but first let's take a few minutes to get to know Charlie a little better and hear more about his amazing story. Hey, Charlie, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Super excited to be here. Thank you both for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to start your podcast, The Way Out?
I can, yeah. So it's interesting. I've had several attempts at recovery. Most of us have. And previous attempts at recovery for me were marked by me doing a lot of power shares in 12-step meetings, waxing poetic about recovery principles that I had no intention and was not actively working. And we all know that guy. We all know that guy if we've been in recovery. I was that guy.
It's a likable guy. Oh,
I might have been married to that guy, actually.
My brother.
I might have been married to him.
I loved that AA version of my brother who would, like, wax poetic about, like, God, those amends were fun. They lasted, like, I don't know, 3 years, but they were amazing.
And my recovery was not sustainable in those two initial stints for a variety of reasons. And coming into sobriety this last time, almost 10 years ago, I really surrendered this time. I wasn't planning on it. Going to treatment this last time was not my idea. Okay? Getting sober this last time didn't start out as my idea. I was just trying not to get divorced for the third time. Okay? That's it. I just was trying not to get divorced. And something happened in that treatment counselor's office that I still have a hard time really reckoning with, but I surrendered, and I don't know why, but I completely and totally surrendered in that treatment counselor's office. I got completely honest about the full scale and scope of my addiction and alcoholism with another human being for the first time in my entire life. I was just done. I just didn't ever want to feel like I had been feeling right before coming in, right? And she asked what I wanted to get out of this thing, and I said, I just want to know why I am the way I am. And she laughed at me. And she said, okay, let's say we figure it out. Let's say it's because your mom died when you were 11 years old. Or let's say it's because you had big addict and alcoholic buttons from birth, or a combination. Mm-hmm. Do you think if you find out why you are the way you are, you'll ever be able to drink normally again? No. Do you ever think you'll be able to use safely again? No. Cool. Should we figure out how we get better instead of why you are the way you are? And that was that first light bulb moment for me. And I just started to really surrender into whatever suggestions seemed to make sense coming from the people that had what I wanted. There was people that were in treatment and then in the rooms of recovery that had what I wanted. They had serenity, they had peace, they had joy. They had lost the desire on a daily basis to consume their drug or drugs of choice. I wanted that, so I did what they did. And the podcast sprouted out of that. I wanted to share these stories. For the first time, I was really listening to the stories that people were sharing in these rooms. And these stories need to get out of this church basement. And other people need to hear these stories, because if they're changing me, they can change other people. And so it was a combination of wanting to elevate these stories and make them more accessible for people that don't find themselves in a recovery meeting for any number of reasons. And mm-hmm. also an amend of sorts. Let me elevate other people's stories. Let me try to shut my yapper enough so that somebody else can share their story and it can help people.
How has hosting your podcast, Charlie, impacted your own recovery process?
It's been one of the greatest journeys and one of the greatest gifts in my recovery and in my life, really. The people that I've met as a result of this podcast and what I've learned as a result of this podcast, it never ceases to amaze me. Never. I always think to myself, I think I might be benefiting more than anybody else from this podcast, from the Way Out mm-hmm. podcast, just because I have an opportunity to interview such fascinating people in recovery and learn from them. And I always learn something from somebody that comes on the podcast. And I don't expect it. I've been doing the podcast now for 8 years. And so kind of get a little like, what am I going to learn from this person sometimes? And always I'm like, this was the best interview ever afterwards, right? Like coming in, I'm like, yeah, it's looking forward to this. This will be good or whatever. And then this was so good, you know? So, I mean, I just got off of an interview and the guy does thought field therapy. And he legit performed it on me in the interview. And I did not know he was going to do that. My mind. It blew my mind. And how I felt before, you think about a specific experience that has a lot of negative energy. You think about it, you go through this process, and then you think about it. It changed how I felt about that experience significantly. I was not expecting that. So that only happens as a result of doing a podcast like I do. So yeah, it's amazing.
It's so funny. Right before we started, I was editing our podcast that we did with a IFS therapist, that internal family systems, the one who like helps you break
I've heard of that.
Personality. Yeah, into parts. And so I was just editing it and she was like, you know, there's the protector and mm-hmm. the firefighter. And I was like, this was a good episode. I need to talk to my therapist about this. Yeah. Like, let's talk about the inner child. But it's true. I learned so much from doing the podcast. And I learned so much from Kathleen, too, every time we do it.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. So, Charlie, can you share, we're going to switch gears a little bit, but can you share some of the most common social challenges you faced when you began your sobriety journey?
Oh, for sure. I think for me, the biggest thing was professionally, right? Like I leaned in to my recovery identity pretty early, and that was an active choice for me. I recovered out loud, and that was very liberating for me to recover out loud and begin to integrate recovery as a part of my identity. And it brought accountability. I told everybody that I was in recovery. I didn't scream my program at the top of my lungs, and I still don't. But I recovered out loud. But professionally, it was different. It was a much different vibe from a professional perspective to let somebody know that you're in recovery, because it only comes up really in a situation where there's drinking, a professional event where there's drinking, a something of that nature, an after hours work event, right, where there's drinking. So I think that was the hardest piece. How do I tell people in that context that I don't drink, and how do I get through situations like that not drinking? It helped at the time that I had a boss that was in recovery, so that helped quite a bit. I was really fortunate for that reason, but we weren't always together. In fact, often we weren't when it came to these things. We'd be dividing and conquering around things like that. Honestly, and it sounds silly maybe to some people, but I would always have a drink in hand. I would always have a club soda in my hand constantly, because then nobody would ask if I wanted a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
That's the one piece where, you know, that's where it's going to come up. Hey, you want a drink? Can I get you a drink? If I already have a drink in my hand actively, you're not going to ask me. And so that became really early in professional functions. I always have a club soda in my hand, so nobody's going to ask me if I'm drinking or not. And if it comes up, then, you know, I just ended up spitting it out, like, I don't drink, I quit. And that's a pretty short conversation. So I think then social situations, that was probably the worst. And most people that I knew that were close to me when I got into recovery for this third time weren't like, what? You know, I mean, they were like, yeah, that makes sense. So from a personal perspective, it was a little easier. And I really associated only with people in the beginning that were in recovery. I made a pretty clean break from that perspective, okay. Right? I dove right into the recovery community. And so everybody around me was doing what I was doing, right? So from a personal social perspective, folks in recovery became my social circle for sure.
I really like the idea of talking about that recovering out loud. I didn't for the first 5 years. And so it was tough to just order a mocktail, but not really explain why. And my spouse was not comfortable with me saying that I was sober. So, and was not comfortable with me going to AA meetings. So I couldn't really lean into the social aspects of recovery. So do you have any advice for people like me, the first 5 years when I couldn't really recover out loud for fear it would damage my relationship and damage like some of my social interactions and friendships?
Absolutely. Have a number of people that are in recovery, or at least what I would call recovery friendly, recovery supportive allies that you can reach out to no matter what, in any situation that you know they got your back and that you can connect with. Having a recovery friend circle so that you can tap into at any time, whether it's a text, a call, whatever it is, when you're feeling your feelings and they could just be there with you while you're feeling your feelings, because as we always say, when we get sober, good news and bad news. The good news is you're going to feel again. The bad news is you're going to feel again. Mm-hmm. Having somebody mm-hmm. that you can work through your feelings with that is either in recovery or is an ally can be a tremendous help when you're in a situation where it's not as supportive around you in other contexts.
Yeah, I do want to encourage people to recover out loud, because I think that there's a lot less stigma now than there was even like 5-10 years ago.
100%.
So I think that the sober curious movement makes it.
I love that. I love that movement. I love that recovery has gotten sexy. And I think there's still some stigma, but it's a lot less today. And it's because people made choices to recover out loud. 10 years ago, it was not as common. And honestly, I just started doing it and I didn't even I didn't even think about it. I didn't even think about the stigma, like, until, like, maybe somebody mentioned it. I think maybe it was 6 months in. And I'm like, you're right. There is stigma. And it was not too late. So, and I'd already experienced the benefit of recovering out loud. So I was all in already. But I did have that sort of like, I didn't even think about that. What am I doing? I'm good. I'm going to keep doing it.
So I know Kathleen's going to roll her eyes when I ask this, but I'm not sure if you ended up getting the third divorce, but I am trying to date sober for the first time ever in my entire life. And I was so nervous to tell people if I'm on a date. The first date, I was like, oh, I don't drink. And then the second one, it was like, oh, I'm sober. And then the third one, it was like, actually, and this is also what I do for a living, by the way. And so do you have any advice on how to explain sobriety to new acquaintances?
You know, it's interesting. Yes. So I am divorced. So it's a great story. It's a great.
She doesn't mean to laugh. I'm sorry. I'm apologizing on her behalf.
My story's amazing, too. My story is, it's so shocking. It's funny.
Yes.
It's so bad, it's good.
Look, gallows humor is a real thing here in recovery, right? So I got home after treatment. I think I was like 3 days in. And I had recognized like all the things that I did in our marriage at that point that I didn't tell her about that were wrong, and I was feeling really bad about it. And so I told her all of them, just all of them, in a big list. Like, I drove drunk with your kids in the car, I did all these things, right? Yeah, we're not married anymore because I think that was the straw that broke the old camel's back at that point. And so the steps are in order for a reason. I'm a 12-step guy. You know, that's like step 9, and I hadn't really proper done step 1 yet. And so I'm eternally grateful for her. She was the person that I needed in my life at that time. And she was a part of my journey in a way that was really instrumental from a recovery perspective. And she also stayed married to me for 6 months or so and let me be on her Cadillac insurance so I could go to treatment and get well. And so she loved me enough, even though she didn't like me very much at that time, to keep me on her insurance so I could get well and launch my recovery. And I'll be eternally grateful to her for that. And yeah, dating and recovery is, I'm all out about that too. So I think for me, it's like, I'm sober, you know, because you're going to know that right away. So I'm really upfront about that. And so the people that I end up meeting, dating, they know that right off the bat. Like, it's very clear because it's a core part of who I am and what I continue to need to be in order to live substance free. And so it's never going to really be a backseat thing for me. It's going to always be a pretty important, not pretty, it's always going to be a major part of who I am.
Yeah, I get that. Kathleen, do you remember the guy? Okay, this is a good one. Do you remember the guy that I dated that acted like he didn't drink? He's like, oh, I only have one drink max. Then we went away for the weekend and he drank martinis. That's more than one drink. And if you have multiple martinis, but anyway, so that also, I actually agree with Charlie. The more upfront you are, I think the more likely you're gonna get a honest response from the other person, but not always.
Not always.
Sometimes I think I'm so awesome that people lie and say that they're
sober. Like I could, like, or that maybe they're like, I could do that. Yeah, I could be.
Yes, I think that's what Kathleen said. That she's like, that's who he maybe wants to be.
100%. Yeah, for sure.
Sorry about that.
No, don't ever apologize for digressing.
The digression is good. So Charlie, you mentioned that you really surrounded yourself, like, within the sober community with others who were in recovery when you got sober. What What advice would you give to someone who's maybe struggling to maintain friendships, like past friendships, because of their sobriety?
I always think about my co-host, Jason, who had a much harder time with that piece because I became pretty isolated by the end. So I didn't have a lot of close relationships at the end with people that were drinking because, again, I got pretty darn isolated. Jason had a harder time with that, and he would always say that that's a lot of what would end up triggering relapse for him. He would try to get sober, and then he would feel bad for ditching out on his quote-unquote really good friends, and then he'd start hanging out with these friends like, hey, you don't hang out with me anymore. What do you not like me anymore? That kind of stuff, right? And he'd end up hanging out with them again, and then he'd end up using again, of course, right? Because that's just what happens.
Yeah.
You know, I love the mirror neurons bit, right? We have mirror neurons. There's a biological reason why we tend to do what the other people around us do.
Mm-hmm.
And he just decided, look, I got to love you from afar. I got to love you from a distance, and that's possible. To love you from a distance. And I learned that from him, and I've used that in my recovery since. If a relationship isn't healthy for me for whatever reason, you relapse, that happens to, man, does that happen, right? We get close and a friend relapses. I gotta love you from afar right now. Like, I can't be in the middle of that. It's not healthy for me. But know that I love you, know that I'm here for you, and also know that I can't hang out with you because I can't risk my own sobriety as a result of it. So, you know, it's prioritizing the sobriety and, again, also knowing that I can love you from afar.
Yeah.
So, Charlie, it's summer, and I have some triggers around summer. I have triggers around a lot of stuff. I have triggers around holidays. I have triggers walking down the street, and there's, like, outdoor. Kathleen, did you know that? Like, did you know there's two breweries across the street from my apartment?
I did. But not like, you're not going to go in and drink beer. Like, no, I knew that.
I'm just saying, like, I'm walking the dog and I'm watching people drink beer flights. That's all I'm saying. No, are you looking to reset your relationship with alcohol? Look no further than our self-paced 7-day reset program. In just 1 week, you'll gain the tools and support you need to kickstart your journey to a healthier, more balanced lifestyle. Our program includes daily audio, helpful exercises, and guided reflections. And best of all, it's on your time. Head over to sistersinsobriety.substack.com and let's take that first step together towards a better you. So, Charlie, what strategies can help someone stay committed to sobriety during those triggering time? So July 4th, and you have all these memories of July 4th's of past. And what can help people during those big triggers?
I'm a big advocate of sober events, right? And recovery events. And there's a ton of them around all holidays because we know better than anybody what a trigger holidays and special events can be for us. So I would really encourage folks to reach out to your recovery community. I identify if there's some sober recovery events that you can participate in. And, you know, for me, that rewrites it, right? I get to rewrite 4th of July, and I've been able to do that in recovery. Mm-hmm. I no longer think about it as a drinking event because I've been able to rewrite it with positive sober activities. If you're a meeting person and you go into whatever recovery meetings, 12-step or otherwise, get to a meeting. There's always meetings. Like, we're the only people that meet on Christmas Day, right? Like, because we need it, right? So those are my two big keys. Like, find a recovery event around that day, or if you're a meeting person, again, 12-step or otherwise, find a meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can jump on one online. And to be honest, I'm not a 12-step person, but I will occasionally go to a 12-step 100%. Meeting. when I'm going through a tough time and I just want that sort of that structure, which I don't typically, but there are moments where, so I wouldn't even be nervous if you're not a 12-step person and it's Christmas Day and you're having a hard time, like jump on a meeting online. It's not hard.
Not in the great thing about 12-step programs is the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop. That's it.
Yeah.
It's the only requirement. So how great is that? You don't have to go every day. You don't have to. You can pop in and pop out when you need it. And as long as you have a desire to stop, you are more than welcome to come in. And guess what? In open meetings, that's not even a requirement.
It's true.
Yeah, and also I think people are nervous about this, like, God, higher power thing. That's not what all, the meetings aren't just about that, right? You just go and you're sharing and you're listening to other people, which to me is the best part, is listening
The biggest benefit for years for me in the beginning was that mutual aid, that peer support, you know? Spirituality and a lot of the principles that I work today resulted as a part of that, and has really made a impact on me in ways I could not have predicted in any way, shape, or form. But that basic level of peer support and mutual aid is a critical component of 12-step and other recovery meetings. There's, you know, there's recovery dharma, there's smart recovery, there's a lot out there.
Yeah. Does counseling or therapy play a role in you maintaining your sobriety,
yes,
Charlie?
Absolutely. It was instrumental in my early recovery. I always say it took working the 12 steps in order with a sponsor along with EMDR therapy, and that unlocked.
I'm doing EMDR.
It unlocked my recovery, Sonia, Kathleen. I'm telling you.
Wow.
You, it unlocked my recovery. It was transformational.
Wow, that is very interesting because I'm doing EMDR and it's quite a process.
It is. And, you know, this thought field therapy builds on that, and it's less of a process. It's interesting. I mean, the practitioner really did it on me impromptu in the interview. So that's fascinating because it really centers the same principle, EMDR therapy and thought field therapy, which is allowing my body and my mind to understand that I'm here, not there, when I am thinking about the traumatic experience. And prior to EMDR, every time I thought about my mom dying, I was instantly transported back to that moment when I was on the couch and my dad was breaking the news. And I felt like I was 10 again. And I felt stuck in it. And I never knew when the memory would come up. I never knew when it was going to paralyze me. And I never knew what those emotions would trigger me to do. Mostly use, but also other things that were not healthy. And EMDR allowed me to go through that experience again in my body. And my mind knew that I was here.
Did you know your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right. It's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. That's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part, it's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent right to your door. By tracking your biological age, you can actually see how the changes you make, whether it's to your exercise, diet, or sleep, affect your health over time. It's about taking actionable steps to improve your well-being. Oh, and if you're wondering about high-profile people taking it seriously, Brian Johnson, the guy who's working on reversing aging, and I watched his documentary on Netflix, uses True Diagnostic to track his progress. Ready to find out your biological age? Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code CIS2025 at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code SIS2025 to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
In this moment. And so now when I think about that, it's still a very powerful memory. But I know I'm here. And my body knows I'm here. And yeah. That's the difference. So
when we talk about memories, I know all of us have these shame and guilt ridden memories related to past behaviors when we were using. How do you think people can deal with that, especially in early sobriety? We were talking right before we started recording about having to tell somebody that you care about, look, I did all these things to damage our relationship. And how do you do that without it dragging you back down into that place?
That's a great question. For me, the 12 steps were instrumental in that process because working step 4 and 5 allowed me to do an inventory of myself and some self-examination, which allowed me to understand patterns of behavior that were driving my actions, right? And were perpetuating these cycles. And I also understood that these were natural instincts that had gone awry and that I was doing the best that I could with what I had at the time, which was not very much. Okay. So I got to practice some self-forgiveness and some grace around that. And just like in therapy, when I went through that experience and I got to be there for myself in a time that I wasn't able to and originally, I think about that in the same context in terms of the way that I behaved prior to getting into recovery. I did the best that I could with what I had at the time. And I feel bad for that guy. That guy didn't have any tools. That guy was lost. That guy was in a lot of pain. And he was hurting himself and he hurt other people too. And that self-forgiveness and that understanding that I really wasn't trying to hurt people, I was hurting. And then going through the 9th step and just owning my piece. When I did my amends, I didn't get really like nitty gritty, like, I'm sorry for this and this and this and this. They know. They already know. Right? And so it was more about a process of, I'm sorry I hurt you. I'm healing now. I'm getting better now. And I want you to know that I own what I did. And if there's anything that I can do to make it right, let me know. Open book, like whatever. If there's anything I can do to make it right, you let me know. But just know that I understand that I hurt you and that I am changing today. And that was the message that I brought to the people that I made amends to, and they were received. They were hard amends. Some of them were really hard. Invariably, those amends transform those relationships. So it doesn't mean that we still have a relationship today. Like with my last ex-wife, I made the amend, you know. My sponsor's great because it was like you listed them in terms of everybody's on your 4-step. You list all the people that are on your 4-step, and those are the people that you got to make amends to. Okay. And then you list, like, here's the people I'm totally cool with making amends to right now, no problem. Here's the people, like, not sure. And then here's the people I want no part of making amends. I want no part of it. And she was on that, I want no part of it. Mm-hmm. Right? He's like, you're doing that one first. But he knew what he was doing, and I went and I made that amend, and I owned it. And I really appreciate that. And, you know, I don't think there's anything I need to apologize for. And we kind of got, I was like, what? Nothing? You can't think of anything?
Not even.
Really? Because you banished me to the boiler room for 2 weeks and then kicked me out with like 4 days to find a place with my two kids and threw all my crap out onto the lawn and it all got ruined. Nothing? Nothing. Okay. And I called my sponsor. I'm like, you and she. And he's like, you did what you were supposed to do. And you can walk away knowing that you did your part, right? I was like, this isn't helping, but I understand. And he's like, also, you probably need to pray for her. And I had to do that going in. I had to pray to get ready because I resented. I had a big resentment. And I had to pray for that resentment. I was praying and praying and praying to a God that I really didn't understand at that time. But I was praying. And it worked. Like, I got ready. I don't know how I got ready, but I understand today that spiritual actions have a physical result. There is a physics to my spiritual actions. I don't have to believe in them. I don't have to like doing it even, but spiritual actions have a physical result. There's physics involved in that. And that's been my experience. And then I'm praying afterwards to relieve myself of the resentment. And I get an email, I think 3 weeks later, and she's like, you know, I was thinking about it. You made the amends and you said you had to pray to get ready. So you had a resentment. And she went into this long, like, I'm sorry for this. And I'm sorry for this. And I'm sorry for this.
Oh, wow.
And it was, of course, right when I had let it all go and I didn't really care anymore.
Yes.
Was the moment I get this email from her saying, so, you know, the spiritual actions for me have a physical reaction.
Charlie, this might be a misconception I have, but from what you said, like, this is sometimes what I've thought about amends, is that you take 100% responsibility for everything that happened in that relationship. So I remember when my brother was doing amends, and I remember when he was doing it to my parents, I was like, don't do it. Don't let them off the hook. And I remember just being like, dude, no, they're going to think they were good parents. And it was all you. And then by default, me. And so I remember being so like, come on, man, not them. And Kathleen, by the way, my amends, I'm really sorry I showed up hungover at your baby shower 10 years ago. But
can you do it more proper than
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that felt really...
I did 100% responsibility.
It's true. You've never done an amends to me, Sonia.
Really sorry, Roll.
I was Wait, what about... You didn't come to my wedding either.
That wasn't because I was drunk.
Oh.
Yes. Okay, so back to the... So is amends, that's so interesting that you said the prayer part and the resentment part, so those pieces are still there. So is it taking 100% responsibility for everything that's happened in a relationship and letting somebody...
Absolutely not.
Is this just the wrong way of thinking
for
about
me,
it?
Okay. Absolutely not. No, it's about owning my side of the street and my behavior. It's taking accountability for my behavior. I'm not worried about what you did. I let that go. It doesn't make it right. Doesn't mean I doesn't mean that what you did was acceptable. Doesn't mean any of that. I don't even talk about that in the amend. That's you. That's on you. Your behavior is on you, right? I'm owning my side of the street. I'm not owning the fact. I'm fully aware and still, that's the resentment piece. Like, if you hurt me and that's real, then I need to do some work around that. If it's still taking up energy, that's me. That's work I have to do to get through how you hurt me, right? Because if it's taking up emotional and spiritual energy, that's my problem. I don't have to like it, but it is my problem. I don't even want it to be my problem. But it is my problem, and nobody can fix that. Only I can, right? And so praying for that person and understanding that they're sick too.
Yeah.
They're sick too. They're imperfect too. They're flawed too. And I have to entertain the possibility that they also were doing the best that they could with what they had at the time, and that they were hurting and they hurt me. And that's what allows me to forgive.
So, Charlie, you talked about isolation a little bit in terms of your friendships. You said you were quite isolated by the time you got sober. What would you say to people if they're experiencing loneliness or isolation during the recovery process? How does someone cope with
that? It's so hard, and I feel for you if you're in that place of isolation and loneliness, because I've been there and I feel for you. And I know what that feels like, and it's not a good feeling. And yet, it's comfortable in a weird way, right? Because we get used to it, and we get accustomed to this isolation. I would recommend finding a group of people, whether it's a recovery meeting, whether it's an online space, find a community of people that are like-minded, that you relate with, that are on the same path as you, that understand what it's like to feel like we feel. Isolation is a very common experience for those of us who find ourselves in recovery. And it doesn't magically stop the minute we decide to put down the substances. And I would suggest that you do uncomfortable things that are hard, that feel really foreign, and pick up that phone and text people and just say, how you doing? Just checking in. I do that every day, not because I want to a lot of the time, because I need to, because I need to practice that, and I need to get increasingly better at that. And I look at a lot of what I'm doing in recovery is practices. I'm not good at it. That's why I have to practice it. And I continue to practice my spirituality. I continue to practice reaching out to people, even though still my instinct is to isolate. Almost 10 years sober, and my instinct is still to isolate. So I've been doing that a lot longer still. So these actions that I talk about that have a physical response, that have a physics to them, that's one of them. When I reach out to you, I'm building that connection. And as a lot of us know, through the work of amazing people like Dr. Gabor Mate, connection is vital for us in recovery. Vital. And I have to do it intentionally, even though sometimes it feels really mechanical, you know, but it doesn't matter that it feels that way.
Yeah. So you're saying sometimes it might not feel like it's your natural instinct to do it, but you push yourself to do it because you know how important it is for recovery and how it's not just recovery. Like, honestly, as humans, we need to connect for our mental well-being. And so you'll do it. Even though it might not be your natural tendency.
That's right. And I have one thing going for me is I am very habit-oriented, good and bad. Right, so I can slide in some pretty nasty bad habits pretty easy. Those are easier because they usually feel good in the moment, right? But I can slide into good habits too. And so making a habit out of reaching out to people, making a habit out of doing spiritual prayer meditation, a habit out of physical activity daily. Those are good habits. And so cultivating those good habits yields returns. And I'll go to a recovery meeting and somebody, thanks for reaching out to me XYZ day. That really made my day. That really mattered. Or they'll reach out to me spontaneously because I've been, you know, so that snowball effect that I really believe that those kinds of things make a huge difference in our lives.
Yeah, I think Kathleen sees me do it pretty mechanically sometimes when I'm having a really bad week. I'm going to a salsa class, and I'll say it just like that. I don't want to go, but I'm going to go.
Correct.
And
I'm really good at that, Sonia. Really, really good. No, she's good because, like, Sonia also does not cancel on things, really. It's not always like a social thing, but you don't cancel on things.
No, yeah, I can be pretty low and get
still do it.
Still do it. But I think what I hope for people is that it took me so many years to figure it out. And I would rather people just figure it out at the beginning, that those, the habits, the routine, the getting out and not isolating is so big. I think for some reason, I almost thought the isolating was like, not like healthy, but it's like what I needed.
Yes.
Right. So now I've turned the isolating into like journaling. Right. So it's like, let's accomplish something when we're isolating. Like, let's be honest. Yes, I watch a lot of Netflix, but it's the one thing I preach so much to people, because I struggled so much. And if I had just known that, it would have been a lot easier. 100%.
It's a process, and it's an evolution. And there's going to be times where we know we should not be isolating, and we do it anyway.
Yeah, it's so funny. Just talking today, I was like, you know what? I don't have anything really social like today. And I'm, you know what? I think I'm actually going to go to a meeting tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to go. And I haven't ever been to a meeting in Toronto. And I'm in Toronto right now. And I think I'm going to go.
Yeah, there's got
to
be amazing meetings in Toronto.
Yes.
Yeah. So
if you need any recommendations, been around the block in some of those meetings.
Really? Okay. Is there one at that place you got married, at that church where you guys had your photos taken?
No. Oh, yes. At that church?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'll go to that one. Speaking of, that's a really big part of my self-care and in my recovery, is like just getting out and doing things. So what other types? I know you mentioned like briefly, like moving your body every there any other things you can, or what today, right? Like, I've convinced myself that my leg hurts and I don't want to go to the gym. And so what are you going to say to me?
I'm a big person that find something that you like to do that's also physically active. It doesn't have to, if you're a gym rat, great. And that's your jam, great. Ideal state, we find something that we actually really like to do. And that it's also, I don't care if it's pickleball, I don't care if it's basketball, I don't care if it's hiking or walking. For me, I love to walk. And so I walk my dog, Louie, every day. And I just love to do it. Mm-hmm. It's my jam, right? And so I'm going to do it pretty much hook or crook, unless my leg hurts. Then maybe not. Actually, I'll still probably do it even though my leg hurts. Sonia and Kathleen, I'll probably still do it.
My leg doesn't actually hurt. It's just like a slight, like.
So what I would say to you, Sonia, is we passed by a new yoga studio that we had not done the other day or seen. And I wonder if they have a restorative class, because maybe you need to listen to your body, but still move your body.
I like that.
You know what? Right before we got on here, that is what I thought. I was like, you know what? I don't feel like doing weights. That's
no, so there you go.
And so I'm like, okay, but I can still do 30 minutes of Pilates. I just don't. And I can take Ellie, my dog, for a walk.
There you go. Then you're moving your body. It doesn't have to be like the gym check. That's right. It. I did the weights, so that's when I worked out. It's.
Does anyone else feel like this podcast has been therapy for me today?
I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah.
For Sonia. Yeah.
And me too. Every time I'm on a podcast, every time I do a podcast, it's therapy.
God, we've covered dating. We covered like my parents. Like, I don't feel like working out today.
I wanted to ask you, how can someone identify and manage the triggers that might lead them to a relapse? So you said you had attempted your own sobriety, right? A few times. The last one has stuck for 10 years.
Almost 10 years. And so, no, they say something in one of the 12-step programs that roughly translates into you can't celebrate it early. Like,
it's not guaranteed, right? Like, it's not, this is the thing, and we've talked about it on previous podcasts, like sobriety, whether you're 10 years, 20 years, like, it's not guaranteed. Sonia's brother, my ex-husband, was sober, well, physically sober, not emotionally sober, but sober for 10 years, maybe a bit over, and he relapsed.
There you go. That's it. The longer I'm sober, the more I realize that for me, it's a one day at a time thing.
Yeah.
he had a major trigger, right? And I then, a couple of years later, had the same trigger and almost relapsed as well. So I,
it's a great question because I still get them and people still get them. And if I'm able to reach out to somebody and tell somebody about it, man, does that make a world of difference? Sitting in trigger by myself, not a really great plan for me.
No.
But if I can reach out to somebody and just say it out loud, I'm triggered right now. Here's why. It really takes a lot of the power away from it. And I'm connecting again, right? And that active connection is very much like an antidote for me. It's like antidote serum right in to the trigger when I'm actively connecting and I can be honest about what I'm going through. And that's not easy. The hardest thing for me in recovery is to be really honest about what I'm going through and how I'm feeling, if it's a rough moment or a rough patch. That's the hardest thing. There's vulnerability in that, and there's a lot in that that's hard for me. But I do it because I want my sobriety more than I am scared to be vulnerable and honest, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I like that. But you want your sobriety more than your fear of being vulnerable and honest. That's a great, that's a really great way to put it.
Yeah. Charlie, can you share a time where you really felt challenged in your sobriety and how you overcame it?
Absolutely. There's a number of times where it was really challenging, but I would say that most recently, a long-term girlfriend of mine and I, we were together for 5 years. And we broke up. And it was hard, really hard. And yet I walked away from that relationship feeling like I had demonstrated real growth because I didn't leave claw marks on that relationship. And... Yeah. I know that although we weren't meant to be together for the rest of our lives, I didn't have to hurt her in the process. And I could come to terms with the fact that the relationship was ending and not hurt her in that process and not hurt myself in that process. And I allowed myself to experience that loss without reverting back to the really comfortable, counterproductive thought and behavior patterns that I had demonstrated all my life. And I really leaned into my home group in a way that I had never before. I got really vulnerable and I got really honest about what I was going through. Might have cried. And they just loved me. And they just supported me. And what sprouted out of that period of loss and grief and vulnerability was something really beautiful. And the relationships that I had prior to that experience were good. And coming out of that experience were amazing. Because I had the willingness to really lean in. And I had a choice. And it's only because of recovery I knew I had that choice. I had a choice. Do I be vulnerable and do I lean into the people that I know are there? Or do I revert back to those counterproductive thought and behavior patterns? Drinking, using, isolating. All of those things that I would use in order to anesthetize the icky feelings. And so that would be the experience that comes to mind. And it was hard. And I did think about using, for sure. And that makes sense. That makes sense that I did. Because it was a lot of overwhelming and uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah. What advice, Charlie, would you give to someone who's considering sobriety but is afraid of how hard it will be, afraid of the changes it might bring, just afraid?
It's a great question. Run the experiment. Just run the experiment. Mm-hmm. What's the worst that could happen if you run this sobriety experiment? What's the absolute worst that could happen? Mm-hmm. Think about that. And then think about what could happen on the plus side. Just run the experiment. Run the experiment. I remember really early in recovery, I listened to a lot of Joe and Charlie. And for those who don't know who Joe and Charlie are, I always say it took Bill and Bob to write the big book and Joe and Charlie to explain it. And they kept saying that. Run the experiment. Just run the experiment. If at the end you don't like the results, we'll happily refund your misery. Right? Mm-hmm. And it made sense to me. Like, what do I have to lose? Literally nothing. Right. I have everything to gain and nothing to do, nothing to lose. Just run the experiment. Get into whatever makes sense for you from a recovery perspective. There's so much out there, and that's so beautiful. I love elevating and celebrating all pathways to recovery. So find one that speaks to you. Try a couple out. And then just run the experiment. Don't judge the process. Don't judge what you're doing. Just identify if it's helping you. Judge the results.
I cannot echo that enough. It's a great way to put it, is run the experiment. And it's going to be hard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. If you're anything like me, it's going to be amazing in the beginning, the pink cloud effect. It's just going to be so great in the beginning. Like, no, you know, mostly because I'm not drowning my body in massive amounts of ethyl alcohol or whatever substance that's literally poisoning my body. So just as a result of not doing that on a daily basis, I'm going to feel better from that perspective. But as we progress and that initial pink cloud wears off, it gets lifey. It gets real. And continuing to trust the process, run the experiment, and do those actions that have a very physical consequence, reaching out to people, daily physical activity, those kinds of things will yield tremendous rewards for you on a daily basis.
Thank you so much, Charlie. It was a pleasure to meet you.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Sonia, Kathleen, thank you so much for having me. Thanks for allowing me to come on and recover out loud with you all. It's been a blast.
Follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.